Welcome to the podcast. My name is Jamie Knight, and I'm a realtor with Real Broker here in Cajun Country, Lafayette, Louisiana. The goal of this podcast is to provide massive value by bringing insider access to our area's top agents and find out how they've been able to achieve massive success in their business. My hope is that you take away a few things from their experiences to grow your own business. My guest today is renowned author, public speaker, and real estate coach, Ricky Carruth. Man, I'm so excited to spend a little time in sunny Gulf Shores, Alabama. Welcome to the podcast, Ricky.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm good, man. Dude, I'm excited, man. The weather over here is gorgeous.
I see really is.
I see why you live here, man. This is awesome.
It is a great place to live. I grew up here.
Awesome.
So I watched it grow from a little baby, and now it's massive. We have about 8 million visitors every year, which is more than Hawaii. So it used to be the best kept secret in the country, but now it's not so much.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Everybody from Lafayette, I know we're about 5 hours from you. So we, a lot of family and friends have places down here, condos and houses, and it's definitely a frequent spot. So start off by telling us how you got into the real estate business, man, so we get a little backstory.
Yeah, I tell people I didn't really get into real estate. Real estate kind of got into me. Long story short, I grew up roofing houses with my dad down here and fell to history class in University of Alabama. And that was the third college I'd went to and within about a year and a half. So you look around and you say, what can I do? And real estate's one class. And you basically have the same opportunities as a doctor or lawyer. And in some cases, better opportunity than a doctor or lawyer. I mean, a lot of these doctor and lawyers can't really, I don't really know much about, you know, much about doctors or lawyers, but it seems to me like they can't really set their schedule the way that agents can. They kind of got to be, I mean, of course, in the beginning of your career as an agent, but as you get going, you can really get flexible with your, the more efficient you get and the better, the bigger your brand is, the more residual business you have coming in, the more freedom you start to have. And I know, like, as a doctor, like, you know, you might work 12-hour days, like, even, you know, towards the end of your career, right? So, in a lot of cases, especially when it comes to freedom, it seems like being an agent has more advantages than being a doctor or lawyer, which you have to go to school for 10 years for. So, I don't know. For me, it was just like,
what else are you going to do?
This is like a very efficient move. And that's kind of what I like, is very efficient moves. Something I can actually visualize. So I just went for it. And I didn't know if I was going to do it. I took the class and didn't know if I was actually going to do real estate. And I came back and roofed houses with my dad for about 3 days. And I was like, I think I will give real estate a try. But of course, that was after 5-6 years of being on the roof. Actually, when I was like 8, I remember being on job sites and cleaning up the job sites, cleaning up the grounds and stuff. And by the time I was 12, 13, my father taught me how to nail shingles on a roof. I mean, we were on a roof. We were up there. Anyway, I kind of learned how to work really hard through being a roofer. You know, my mom owned a hair salon, so I was able to watch my mom and my dad own their own businesses, but yet work in their businesses as well. So they were both entrepreneurs, but also blue-collar workers within their own businesses, which is interesting. And throughout my real estate career, I was always a single agent, just grinding away. And it's kind of, when you realize that about my parents, you kind of see kind of where I came from. And it was kind of instilled in me to have my own business that I work in. But that's kind of how I got in. And then it took me 8 months to do my first deal. And then I got on a nice little roll. It was something that just happened organically. It wasn't I didn't grow up saying I'm going to be a real estate agent.
Gotcha. You know? So talk to us a little bit about those early days, because you quickly grew your business to doing, I think you talk about it in other situations, but over 100 houses a year. So how did you get there? And tell us like some of the strategy you used in those early days to kind of level up your business.
Yeah. Well, I had a mentor. And he taught me how to look up property owners, what to say, how to call them, find phone numbers, postcards, emails. And it took me a while. You know, real estate is such a big learning curve. I say sometimes It's like poker. It takes you, it could take you 5-10 minutes to learn the game, but a lifetime to understand how to play. It's the same thing with real estate. I could teach someone in 5 minutes how to become the number one agent in their market, but it takes a good decade or two to really develop the skills through experience to be able to really do the business, because there's so many little things about the business. Like most agents, when they talk to a prospect that's interested in doing something, they just kind of go all out for this prospect. And as you become more experienced and you see some of those prospects that seem promising kind of fall out and not really follow through with the deal, you start to realize not everything is what it seems. So you start to kind of read between the lines and understand what the probabilities of deals are before you get too deep into the process with a specific prospect. And you start to understand the nuances behind, yeah, this prospect seems like they really want to do a deal, but I've been here before and it fell through. So let me ask some more questions so I can really understand. And that's when the experience and professionalism starts to come out. So there's all these little things that take a long time to learn. And that's what's so tough about real estate and why 90% of agents fail. I'll tell you why 90% of agents fail within the first year or so. And there was a study done where 80% of people quit whatever it is they're trying to pursue after the first signs of this being too hard or the first, you know, failure of the process or whatever, they quit. And another 10% quit after the second. So 10 more percent of those keep going, but then they quit after that second setback or failure or moment where they realize this is harder than they thought it was going to be.
Right.
Right. So there's 90% right there, right? They just quit.
Yeah.
And you're just going to have these setbacks and these moments. You got to be able to stomach those moments. But yeah, I realized pretty early on that if I was going to succeed, you got to talk to property owners. It doesn't matter what your lead gen is. You know, it could be letters, open houses, social media, Zillow. It doesn't matter what it is. You still got to talk to the prospects. It has to be a real life conversation between you and them. And when I realized that, it's like, well, let me just have the conversation after conversation after conversation, since that's the real goal anyway of any lead gen.
Might as well just cut to the chase, right?
Yeah. That's the goal of any lead gen activity. So let me just do that. But the problem in the beginning of my career was that I didn't understand that I was to value the person over the deal. I would do a deal and never talk to the person ever again. They didn't really care if I did or not. Back then, the market was shooting up so fast. It was a lot like 2021, unless you were in the market back in 2002 and 3. You don't remember, or you don't know, but it was a little crazier than 2021 because of the fact that there was literally free money. Like, there was free money in 2021 because rates were so low, but they were literally, like, people were lying on their loan applications about how much they made. They say, I'll make $1 million, and they wouldn't even check. It was called a no-doc loan. They wouldn't even check, and they would just give you the money based on whatever you said, and you could say anything you wanted.
Right.
And so that's why the market was a little crazier and things were going up. It was a little crazier than 2021, and hence why there were 7 million transactions back then in 2005 or 7. I think 2007 maybe. One of those years, there were 7 million transactions, existing home sales. And in 2021, there were 6 million. So a million less than back then, right? During that rush. It was just crazy. But I could make 10 calls and find somebody that wanted to make an extra make a $200,000, $300,000 profit on their property. I'd call 10 people. Somebody would take me up on it. I would list it, sell in a day, close in 30 days. They're not talking to me ever again because they weren't going to turn and buy something in this,
gotcha,
in this new market where prices were up $300K from where they just bought it a year ago. They were going to take their money and run and sit back and see what happens. And for the most part, but I didn't even pursue them for long-term relationships, future deals, referrals, any of that stuff, because I didn't realize how the game was really played. So it took me going through that and losing everything to kind of learn those lessons. So that's what made me realize it was about relationships. And so when I came back, I went and worked on an oil rig for a while, sleeping in my car, roofed houses for a little while, served tables. Came back in 2008 when I got laid off from the oil rig, and I just started building the business, complete opposite of what I did the first time, right? Focus on the people, not the deals, long-term relationships. You know, I realized that closings happen every single day. So I did, you know, like, until you go through like a market cycle, you don't realize that the market's not there to take you out. You know, it's just there. It fluctuates, and your business may fluctuate a little, but it can't really have the power to take you out unless you allow it to, right? Unless you slow down with the market, or you just decide, okay, the market's dead. What's the use? I'll just quit. But if you actually realize, you know, when these shifts happen, closings continue to happen,
right,
every single day. If you go back through any of the worst times in our economic history, you'll find closings happened every day. And a lot of agents, if you say, hey, could you go, how would you like to go back to 2008, start all over again? Everybody raises their hand, right? But right. At the time in 2008, nobody wanted to be an agent. And it was scary as can be. But now that you know how it played out, you look back and you're like, oh, I would have crushed it. Well, yeah, you would. You know how it played out. And that's why when you get into like a cycle like we are right now, we're down at 1995 levels of transactions right now as a country.
Wow.
Lower than 2008. So, you know, it's a weird time for agents. When you have one of those moments, you have to look at 2008 and be like, okay, here's my 2008. I wanted to go back there then. So this is my moment now, right? I need to go all in and really expand my influence while the market's down, so that when the market re-expands, my business will 3, 4, 5x, which is what's going to happen to a lot of these agents that are out there crushing it right now, just building their brands, making their calls, talking to people, meeting new people, bringing them into their ecosystem, doing weekly emails and social media and stuff like that. They're going to crush it, because when the market comes back, it's going to come back with a vengeance. And who are they going to call, right? They're going to call that agent that has been there through all this, not the one that's been sitting on the sidelines.
On that same note, I heard something the other day that really resonated with me. It was about Grand Prix race car drivers. And what they said basically was, races are won or lost in the turns. So as they're preparing for these races, man, they're taking a look at all the track and they're taking a look at all the lines they want to take. And what happens, man, is in the race, what they do is, instead of slowing down to go through these turns, these really top-notch drivers are basically just hitting the gas, man, through the turns. And then what happens is, once they come out on the other side of the track, they are so far ahead of the other drivers, it's insane. So
that's, you know, a pretty good analogy. It
was just something that I heard and I really resonated with me, because I'm like, 2024 and 2025 is that term.
I'm going to use that.
So when you hit the gas, baby, and you get past those other drivers, they can't even catch you. So when I heard that, I was like, man, it just so resonates where we are right now in our market. We have the opportunity to step up, crush it, make those connections, make those calls, and build that weekly email, build those connections, build those values that you have with those property owners, like you've been saying.
Well, you know, what's interesting is most buyers and sellers are reading the news online and, you know, through press or whatever news channel they watch and stuff. And that's all national numbers. So nationally, we're up 5% or so prices, you know, right now from last year, but that's nationally. And if you look nationally, we're up 22% inventory from last year, but we're still below pre-pandemic levels, right? And your buyers and sellers hear this, and so they start to formulate game plans and make decisions around that data and that information. And what's scary is that's national data. And when you look into the local markets, you know, there's 200 major markets in the U.S. Right now, 54 of those 200 are above pre-pandemic inventory levels. And last year, that number was 17 of the 200, and the year before was 14. So it went 14, 17, which isn't a big jump. But then now this year in October, it's 54. And if you look at like Orlando, they have 5.5 months of inventory right now, which is a balanced market. Between 5 and 6 months of inventory is a balanced market between buyers and sellers. There's just as many buyers as there are sellers. That's the theory. So that's pretty balanced market, which is not a bad thing. You know, you're able to stack listings in a market like that, right?
Absolutely.
You know, this is the first time in probably, I was thinking back, it was like, when's the last time you could actually stack listings? And honestly, it's been a good 5-6 years or so, you know, since you could actually stack listings. Cause I mean, we were in a market where everything you list sells and you couldn't actually build inventory. Everything was selling so quick. But now you can really stack inventory and stack 10, 20, 30 listings, which is what every agent should be trying to do. If you look at a market like Miami, they have 10 months, wow, 10 of inventory in their market. It's an extreme, like this is, it's an extreme 18 to 24 months or something like that would be like really extreme. But like, this is pretty extreme. 10 months of inventory is not just a buyer's market. It's like a super buyer's market, right? Like it's a buyer's market. It's, you know, and you look at some of these other markets and there's still markets that are below pre-pandemic levels. And where there's still some markets that are 3 to 5 months of inventory, which is still somewhat of a seller's market, but they're starting to turn. And see, when a market's on fire, it's easy because like you can look at the national news and you can say, oh, I can list my property anything I want to. It's going to go for more than the full price. You know, it's easy when everything's great. But when the market shifts, then you have to become a local expert. So you got to become a local expert so that you can combat all the chatter they're hearing online when it comes to the national real estate market. That way they don't get the two confused. If you're in Miami and people are thinking that, oh, we're still below pre-pandemic levels of inventory, and this, and you go to a listing appointment, the seller's like, you know, from what I hear, there's not, ain't nothing for sale. No, not in this market. There's 10 months worth of inventory. A balanced market is 5 to 6 months, right? Here's your competition. So you got to be able to paint a picture with your clients right now. You have to become the professional, the local expert. And the only way to do that is to stay up with your MLS hot sheet every day, studying the new listings and pendings and closings and Googling and finding out which companies put out stats about your local market and follow those different websites and stuff so you can stay on top of what's happening with inventory and supply and demand and prices and days on the market.
And even showings too. I utilize my local showing service, and I know a lot of agents don't think about that, but our local showing service has a website that you can actually go on there and track showings at different price points and see what the activity is in different price points.
Stuff like that.
That's another tool that, you know, like you said, that agents should
be using.
Showing time? Our showing time has that. I utilize that a lot when I'm having conversations about where to list these properties at. Mm. Hey, look, from under 400,000, you'll have a much bigger buyer pool. Look at the amount of showings that are here. But if you go 425, you're going to miss that, those, all those buyers that are looking right there in that price point. So a lot of agents don't even think about showing time as a tool, but that's another great tool that we have at our disposal.
Yeah.
Is that showing time. But let me ask you this, because this is a question that I thought about as you were telling me about this, is what happens when everything kind of corrects and we go back to a seller's market? What happens to all those agents that, you know, in regard to this buyer agency thing going on, what happens to all those agents, man, that really didn't know how to sell themselves? They didn't know how to bring value. You know, what happens when we become a seller's market? Because right now we're in a buyer's market. So, hey, any buyer is willing to sign this buyer agency agreement and work with a buyer. But what happens when it flips to a seller's market?
I don't think much changes. Those agents will just adapt and keep trucking. You know, the I don't know when this podcast is going out, but today is actually supposed to be the final approval for the Sitzer Burnett settlement. And the DOJ came out 2 days ago or so with a 5-page document basically saying how they didn't like the settlement, how they thought the buyer agency thing, how we were making buyers sign agencies before we show property, is not good for competition. They didn't really say why that is. They said what they thought a problem was, but they didn't illustrate why it's a problem, right? And it's like, if you're going to tell me what a problem is, you got to tell me why it's a problem so I can fix it. And they didn't really say why it is. They just said, we don't like this. And there were other things that they put in there. But who knows at the end of the day? And what's really strange is that they put the rules in effect for agents to start following these rules before the thing was even approved. Like, it's been August 17th since the rules came into effect that we all had to follow, but yet here we are November 26th is the day of the final approval of the settlement. Why wouldn't you enforce the rules after it's finally approved so we can know exactly? Because if the DOJ is going to be able to come in and change something about it, then it's just... That whole thing, man, since you kind of brought it up, it is just like it's a real cluster because they didn't really think it through too well, you know. And then you get into there's all like, for example, like if you're a member of, you know, one of these MLSs that you don't have to be a member of NAR to be a part of, well, then are you covered under the settlement, you
right,
know? And
right.
then like, would you have to abide by these certain things or are you still liable? There's a... And then you have like the local MLSs, the state associations and the national association. It's a real cluster. And now some of the state associations are getting mad at NAR saying how they're making agents mandatorily be a member. It's messy, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what the aftermath is going to be. Honestly, I don't think anybody kind of does. It's going to take a long time. But I'll tell you this, since the rules came into effect, and one reason I think that DOJ is bringing stuff up is because commissions haven't went down.
Yeah.
Mike Delpriti did a piece and illustrated where buyer agent commissions have went. They've been hovering around 2.6 on average for like years. And, you know, since the settlement, they literally haven't changed whatsoever. And what's even funnier about this is that the sellers are still paying the buyer agent commission, regardless if they offer it up front in the listing or not. The buyers are putting it in the offer for the seller to cover it. And guess what? They're agreeing to it. And in some cases, the buyer agent's making more now because I know a lot of cases where the seller was offering 2.5, but the buyer made an offer and put 3 in there and the seller accepted it. So it kind of backfired because if you hear the lawyers talking, they're like, commissions are going to come down. You know, we really hope we see commissions coming down. It's like, that's the one thing they wanted to come out of this. They made all these hundreds of millions of dollars, and for that money that they made, they want to be able to say, we caused commissions to go down and saved consumers money.
Gotcha.
But the thing is that, which they don't care because they already made their money.
Right.
They just want to be able to look back and say, we did this.
Yeah.
But the thing is they put it in the hands of the market, and the fact is the agents don't get paid enough. It'd be like telling a roofer, okay, you make 10,000 on this job, right? But you know, you're price fixing, so you can't make, you know, we're gonna make it to where we're gonna let them know it's negotiable, right? And so you tell the sellers it's negotiable, and the roofer's like, fine, it's negotiable, but like it cost me 10 grand to do the roof, and the seller's like, okay. And so even though they told them it's negotiable, it is, but that's all that the roofer is going to do the job for. Otherwise, they won't do the job. And that's what I was saying yesterday on Instagram. I was like, you know, the DOJ thinks that I guess we don't work, you know, we don't deserve the money that we make, but they don't realize that we actually deserve a lot more. And if you go down at all, you're going to find a lot of for sale by owners because like agents are not going to do it.
Right.
Right. It cost agents so much. There was a study done by, there's a company that, I think it's called Raise, but they did a study with buyers and sellers, but they did a study and it was like, forget how many buyers it was. It was a lot of them. 50% of the buyers surveyed said that their buyer's agent worked 15 hours. 15.
Right.
And in reality, because this app tracks everything the buyer agent does, right? It tracks everything. It's all logged. And in reality, the buyer worked 87.5 hours on average,
right?
And it was across like 119 different tasks. And there's, you know, it's like, okay, listen, Mr. Buyer, listen, here's a buyer agency agreement. If you want me to work 90 hours for you, okay, 90 hours. Here's the agreement. If you don't want to sign it, that's great with me because you just gave me 90 hours of my life back that I could go do something else that's productive. Working with you is productive, But if you're not interested in paying me for these 90 hours I'm fixing to put in over 119 different tasks, then I'll go spend that 90 hours somewhere else and, you know, for at least the same productivity or maybe even more. And I hope that you, Mr. Buyer, have 90 hours. And by the way, that's 90 hours for a professional that's very efficient, that knows what they're doing.
Right.
For somebody to do it themselves, they're going to spend a lot more than 90 hours to do the same stuff that the agents do. That's the thing, man, is like, when you're paying an agent, you're buying back a lot of time.
Right.
A lot of time, money, and energy that you would have spent on the deal. And anybody listening to this, if you are a consumer and you're like, oh, you know, Ricky's just advocating for agents or whatever, I'm perfectly fine with you going out and doing a social experiment.
Right.
And doing some deals on your own and seeing how you come out. And if you do great, awesome. Go do deals. You know, it doesn't, that's the thing. The general public thinks that, and there may be some agents that don't understand how the game works that get upset or feel some type of way about it. But like, as far as I'm concerned, like I'm perfectly fine with any client that wants to go do the deal on their own. If they want to represent themselves as a buyer, if they want to represent themselves as a seller, great. Go do that. It saved me so much time. But one reason why I don't really care if people do that is because I know that the service I provide is worth a lot, and that there's such a huge consumer pool of people that will not do a deal without an agent.
Right.
Right. So it's like, for me, it's just like, yeah, go try it. You're going to find out real quick. But yeah, like, agent, when it turns into a seller's market, it'll be the same thing as it normally is. I was talking about this with Leo Pereira, and I said, what if it turns into a seller market? We get back into multiple offers, you know, and then you got these buyers going up against other buyers that are basically paying their own agent, and they're not putting it in the offer, and they're going to lose out to those offers. And, but like, it's the same thing as it was before. You got buyers that are paying more. I mean, those same buyers would have lost out in the old market.
Right.
Right. You got buyers that are paying more, waiving inspections, waiving this, waiving that, you know, whatever. You're going to lose to the ones that are given the better offers, regardless about this whole buyer agent commission
gotcha.
Thing. Yeah. Right. Doesn't really matter. Those buyer agents they would have lost that deal in the old market. Right. So it doesn't really matter what they throw at us. Real estate agents, from what I've seen over my 20 plus years in the business, are the most resilient people on the planet. It's just like anything thrown at agents, they just keep going.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this, because we are getting a little bit tight on time, and I want to be respectful of your schedule because I know you're a super busy guy. But man, part of the podcast is we always try to, you know, at least ask this one question. If you're an agent and you're struggling right now, what would be some advice that you'd give them to grow their business right now? 2025 looks like maybe another year of having to really put in that work. But
yeah,
if an agent is wanting to grow their business, give them maybe a quick strategy to grow their business. Maybe talk about some of what you did in those early days of growing your own business, and a tactic, a strategy that they can use to grow their business.
I think this slow market's here to stay for a little while longer, you know, into 2025. So we need to get used to it. And getting used to it kind of puts us in a position where we're really going to crush it when the market turns around and flips the other way. But it's going to be very slow moving. If you look back at the 70s, when we went through the same scenario with low interest rates and then high interest rates and high inflation and, you know, home sales, it's like a Groundhog Day, the same scenario as it was back then. It took it a long time, many, many, many years for home sales, for transactions to get back to normal.
Right.
It's not going to get back to normal quickly. It's just, in my opinion, it's going to be kind of a slow moving. I mean, like, there could be something that sparks things, whatever, but I would plan on really setting up a business model around the current pace of sales. And that way you're kind of hedged, you're kind of protected against anything, because this is as bad as it gets. And if you can build a business model around this pace of sales and you can have a successful business, then when the market rebounds, your business is going to 4 or 5x. So there's plenty of reasons why you should build a model around the pace of today's sales. I mean, for one, we don't know how long this is going to last. But the best strategy right now for me, when I got back in 2008, so it was about the same amount of closings. And what I did was I looked around. I said, where's the deals at? And because there's deals somewhere. And so the deals at the time were foreclosures. I mean, they were 50% off. So I was like, I'm going to find property owners who want to buy these 50% off properties. And then when they appreciate in 3 years, they'll sell them. They'll upgrade to something else. They'll refer me a bunch of people. And by the way, they're property owners in the market. So, and that's literally how I got up to 100 deals a year. But it started in 2008. And by 2014, I was doing 100 deals a year. So it was a 6-year process. But I visualized how this whole thing would play out over time if I really grinded it out. And it was worth it because I did 100 deals a year for 8 years in a row after that, made millions, and now I don't even sell anymore, which is really should be the goal of all agents. Make so much money that you don't have to sell anymore. But what is the equivalent to foreclosures in today's market, right? And I'll tell you what it is. It's new construction, right? It's these builders that are given these massive incentives around buy downs and closing costs and appliances for a brand new product that has a builder warranty, no maintenance for 5 years, you know, beautiful homes, well built,
insurance costs affordable,
insurance costs, gold fortified, you know, and they're building them all over the place. You can kind of pick what location you want and get in there because these builders are dying to sell this product. They've even come down on the price in some markets, but they're giving you the buy downs. So think about it. You can learn everything about a new build subdivision, what incentives they're giving, what the mortgage payment would be, what the prices are, what all is available. You've walked through the properties. You've taken the agent out for lunch. You know everything about it. And now you can use a system like RedX or Mojo or whatever to find all the property owners around that subdivision. Or even across town, it doesn't really matter. Call older homes and say, hey, I see you're on Brentberry. Would you like a brand new home? I got a really nice one I'd love to show you. I can get you in there for 4.9% interest or whatever.
Yeah.
Right? And you know what's interesting about this? There's two things. One, the reason why inventory is coming up, even though rates haven't went down, is because these sellers are dying to move. They've been dying to move, right? They're dying to move. They're finally just threw their hands up like, we can't take it anymore. We hate our house.
Gotcha.
Right? They're tired of waiting on interest rates to come down. So they're like, we're just going to bite the bullet. We're going to get a rate buy down, or we're going to do this, or we're going to do that. And they have so much equity built up that when they sell, they can take that equity and put in their new home and still basically have close to the same payment if they range it right with a buy down. So there are ways to manage this,
right?
And I think that's the great opportunity right now. So the first thing is, this is perfect because the market's matured to the point where these people are ready to go. They're just waiting on you to call them. The second thing, on top of them being ready to go, is that you got to realize the objective is not to sell that new construction. It's to use the new construction as an excuse to offer them something, to show them that you're a giver, not a taker, and then get into a conversation to see what they actually want to do real estate-wise and understand their situation a little better. So you might get some interest in the new construction, but if not, that's okay. Pursue them for the long-term relationship or even short-term business, right? Digging into what it is they want to do. They may not want to do that, but they want to do this. They may want to do this now. They may want to do it later. Like the objective is to get to know these people and really go deep and go all in on the relationship with them. Get them into your weekly email strategy. Get them into your follow-up processes and workflows and just build that brand. I mean, if you create 5 new friends or property owners a day, that's 25 a week, 100 in a month, 1,200 in a year, 24 in 2 years, 3,600 in 3 years, 48, 6,000 people in 5 years in your market you talk to within a 5-year period that are all getting a weekly email, you're the number one agent in your market. You can use the new construction opportunity as the excuse to begin these relationships. And you'll just crush it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that. Man, I had same thing. I had that same conversation with so many people because I'm like, yeah, I use the phones to talk to property owners, expired, canceled, whatever it is. So, man, the conversations that I've been having with a lot of people have been these sellers that they have their this huge house. They no longer need this huge house. They want to get something new, something smaller, easier to manage, single level, cheap insurance. Yeah. I'm seeing it almost on every call.
Yeah.
When I'm talking to people in a certain age bracket, mm-hmm. it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're just waiting there for somebody to pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, man, you know, what can I do to help you in the next couple of years? Do you see yourself staying at this house the next couple of years? Those kind of things. I mean, the new construction angle, that's such a great idea and such a great angle. And
it crushes all the objections because their objection is, well, I'm sitting on a low interest rate. Well, no. I can get you this close to the same interest rate. Right now, but you started this out with, you know, say there's some agents struggling or whatever. And although I just gave them the best opportunity right now in this market, whenever I hear an agent that's struggling, chances are they're either not making calls or they're making calls and they just haven't kind of found their stride, found their place, found their voice on the phone and developed those skills. But there's only one way to develop that skill, you know, is to do it. I had an agent on a coaching call, and she's making the calls and everything, and she does well. You can tell she's still green, but she's working and she's getting better. And she said, "What do? I'm making the calls and everything is going great, but I just have these days where, you know, and you know, like when we get on Zoom, she'll make the calls. She said, it's easier when I'm like, you know, with you guys and stuff, but I'm one by myself. It's hard to get in the mode to just make the calls and stuff." And I was like, "Well, what's your goal? You know, is it a million? What's your goal?" She said, 500,000. I said, "Well, 500,000, you know, 400 is the top 1% of earners in the country. So you're wanting to go above 1%. You're going to be better than the top 1%. You want to be like the top 0.75% or something, right? I mean, you got to realize you're trying to be better than 99.2% of the people in the country. You know, you got to realize it's not just going to be easy,
right,
to become a top income earner in the country, a top 1% income earner in the country. This is going to be hard. And you are going to have moments that you don't feel like doing what you're trying to do. But what's the alternative? You going to roof houses? Right. You're going to mop floors, you're going to flip burgers, you're going to work in an office somewhere, you're going to clock in at Costco or Walmart or Target. Dude, there are people I know that are working at, you know, some of these places.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's no disrespect to somebody that said that, hey, that's what they need to do to take care of their family. I get that. But for agents that really are listening to a podcast like this, man, these are agents that want to grow their business. They want to succeed, right? And the answer to that is get on the phones, man. Like, pick up the phone. Everybody wants to do the cute little social media post, or they want to do the go to agent open houses and tour these houses and all that every day.
Dude, I'm like, okay, man. That agent that wants to make 500, okay?
Right.
That call session that day, she asked me that after the call session. She picked up 7 emails.
Nice.
She had 7 great conversations with property owners. And it took her about 45 minutes to do that call session from the comfort of her own home in the air conditioned environment. Didn't have to drive anywhere, just right there. I said, and those are the exact people she wants to do business with. She called the exact people she wants to do business with. I said, now think about, like, if you were to do an open house, it would have taken you like hours to like get set up, do the open house, break down, advertise it, promote it, do all this stuff. If you use the open house as a way to call owners to invite them, that could be pretty good, but it's still not as efficient because you're still having to do the hours of the open house. You could just call the owners just like this girl did,
right,
and get 7 emails and connect with them without doing the open house. You have to think efficiencies. The people doing video, YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and doing all these things, they're hoping to God that they talk to one of those 7 people that you just talked to, and they gave you permission to stay in touch and gave you the email address. But the thing is you already talked to them.
Yeah.
They're out there putting content out, hoping that those people come to them some form or fashion, but you've already talked to them, right? Before they even saw the video that the agents are putting out.
Yeah. They're hoping for what? The conversation.
Yeah.
Which you already had.
Right. But not to say that all this is bad. every agent should be doing social media every single day. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
But the thing is understand where it fits in your business model, right? It's meant to build your brand. What leads it brings to you, awesome. If you do get into a, if you are one of those 1 out of 100 people that can actually make social media work where the number of conversations it creates flows in at a very high rate and it's enough to, for you to hit your goals, awesome. But not everybody can create content
right.
that creates that kind of engagement where they can actually build their business on and just, and that's the only thing they use to build their business. Most agents are not built like that. And not all agents are built to make calls either. But the difference is whether you get the lead on social media or call them, you still got to call them.
Right.
So if you're not built to talk on the phone, you're not going to make it anyway. It doesn't matter if you're social media or a cold caller or whatever. But I'll end with this. The only thing between agents and their goals are thousands of one-on-one conversations with people in their market. You know, you should try to squeeze that in the next 3 to 5 years instead of stretching it out over the next 20, number one. But number two, if you ask agents, if you're speaking to 1,000 agents online or in person, you say, hey, how many of you guys want to be a real estate agent forever? How many hands do you think goes up?
Right. People are going to be like, yeah, I mean, maybe not till I'm 100, but, you know, a couple more years.
Yeah, zero, right? Zero people want to be agents for the
forever,
rest of their life.
Right.
So I say that not to say, you know, I said that in Vegas to 500 agents, and I was like, so let me get this straight. You guys are all agents. You spent time, money, and energy to come here to learn something that you don't even want to do, right?
Right.
And the point is not that we want to get out of real estate. The point is that this isn't really what we want to do with our life. And so I'm not saying that to discourage people from being real estate agents, because real estate agents, in my opinion, is one of the best segues into what you actually want to do. One of the best. It's the highest paying job I know of.
Right.
Why wouldn't you crush it, make so much money you don't have to sell anymore so that you can go out and do what you actually want to do with your life? Life is too short. So my point is I hope everybody listening, I hope it hits you in a way that it's like, you know what, he's right. This is just a stepping stone for me. I do love it, but I don't want to do it forever. It is a rat race. I want to utilize this for what it is to help people and to progress my financial freedom so that I can actually get out there and do what I want to do with my life. And I want to make that happen now. So that's what I'm saying. The only thing between you and your goals is thousands of one-on-one conversations, and you don't really want to be an agent forever. So why aren't we knocking out these thousands of conversations out as quickly as possible over the next 3 to 5 years? Why are we prolonging it by making videos and hoping that that does something that creates a bunch of business or buying Zillow leads or doing open houses? Like, all those things have their place. But at the end of the day, if you're not having back to back to back to back to back conversations with the exact people you want to do business with, you're really not working as efficiently as you possibly can. And you're just prolonging the inevitable, and you're pushing your dreams out further and further and further.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome, man. So we're going to 100% leave it there, man, because I want to be respectful of your time, dude. So I really, really appreciate you spending a little bit of time with me face to face, man. I'm excited to kind of be here with you in the same room because I've been following you for a little minute now, man. So I'm so excited that agents get to kind of hear a little bit of your backstory and kind of get an update on the NAR lawsuit and some strategies that they can use in their business right now to grow their business, man. So, dude, appreciate you being a part of the podcast, brother.
Glad to do it.
All right, guys. Well, look, if you enjoyed the content, man, we're going to post Ricky's information in the video. Y'all go follow Ricky, man. He's awesome. You can find him on Instagram by his name on a lot of different platforms. We're going to post his information in the details of the video, man. You guys go follow him. He's awesome. And do us a favor and like the podcast, share the podcast, give us a favorable review. And I hope that you guys have an amazing day.